that seems kind of low. Hello, everyone. We're going to get started. I realize it's freezing in here. And we did ask people to change the temperature, so I'm hoping that occurs. If that doesn't happen, you're really going to need to hug each other. So be prepared for that. Can I ask someone to actually close the doors, or at least most of them? Thank you, Bill. I'm going to get us started. I want to ask first if anyone cannot hear me now. Okay, everybody can hear me, good. I will let you know that we will be really speaking everything that's on the screen. So if you can't see the slides, or if there's a level of detail you can't see on the slides, we are going to make them available, and we will be speaking them. So you should be okay even if you can't see all the information on the slides. In the front here, I do have an email list. So I'm Mark Ewart. I'm a consultant for UU Congregations in Stewardship. And I belong to a group called Stewardship for Us. It's a group of consultants. And we do have an email blast around stewardship. So if you want to sign up, the list is up here. That's also how you will find out that the PowerPoint is posted and where it's been posted. We are talking today about year-round pledging, so I wanna make some distinctions in language to start with. Year-round pledging is different than the annual budget drive, which usually happens once in most congregations, either the fall or the spring. There's also a term year-round stewardship. By year-round stewardship, we mean that there might be an annual drive, or there might be a year-round pledge drive program. But year-round stewardship is talking to people about money and their values and how they make decisions about that, growing people's intelligence around it, having learning opportunities and preaching about it, so that people are making decisions, informed decisions about making charitable donations to our congregations. So I've just listed annual pledge drives, year-round stewardship, and then this workshop is around year-round pledging. So, and there are different patterns for that. We're going to be talking more about it as we get into it. I just wanted to make that kind of announcement like they make on the airplane. This plane is going to Memphis. If you're not going to Memphis, now's the time that you can get off the plane. Jason has an opening reading. And then I'll do some introductions to the presenters.
All right. Thanks, Mark. My name is Jason Kenworthy. I'm at the First Unitarian Society of Denver. And sure. Is that better? All right. So not quite a year after First Unitarian switched to year-round pledging, a member came up to me and with great sincerity said, "I just want to thank you so much for making this switch. I'm so glad that we don't talk about money anymore." So to that person, the switch and what I knew to be our not yet fully developed communication strategy was working. To me, the stewardship chair at that moment, that meant that the switch and our discussions about money were failing, or at least failing that one person, and so probably some others as well.
What church are you from?
First Unitarian Society of Denver. So that moment really caught me by surprise, and I thought that if we just made the switch, we'd kind of automatically be talking about money more, and that would be great. So the interaction really reinforced that we not just needed to talk about money more, but needed to talk about money more effectively, more inclusively, more strategically, and even more spiritually. So that way it wasn't this uncomfortable discussion that people didn't want to have, but a foundational piece of our congregational ministry. So maybe you share that desire and you're looking to kind of build a new way towards year-round pledging. So hopefully our session today we'll provide you some practical considerations in that light. So thanks for coming today.
Thanks, Jason. So as you can see, that was Jason Kenworthy. He's a lay leader in the Abundance Ministry team at the First Unitarian Society of Denver. He's also a geologist for the National Park Service. And we have Reverend David Pyle, who is the district executive for the Joseph Priestley District. He's got fans. And he also works for the Central East Regional Group, SURGE. In addition, he's a U.S. Army Reserve chaplain, so I'm grateful today to be presenting with two public servants. Thank you very much. And I am Mark Ewart. I'm a stewardship consultant. I work with Unitarian Universalist congregations with a stewardship group called Stewardship for Us. I'm also the author of a book called The Generosity Path that is available in the bookstore if you are interested. I'm going to start us off today by talking about what every pledge drive needs. So whether you have an annual budget drive or you have a year-round budget drive or you're considering a year-round pledge drive, there are some things that every pledge drive will need to be successful. So I'm going to take a couple of minutes to talk about that. The first thing, the first category is cultural. So a successful drive will always be tied to your mission and goals. It's really not about keeping the lights on. It's really not keeping the parking lot plowed or raked. It's really about your mission and purpose. So your pledge drive should orient in that direction, which means it should be grounded in our faith and values, like the seven principles, Unitarian Universalist seven principles, and also in real personal stories and warm personal connections. You all, I'm sure, are full of wonderful stories about why you love your congregation and you dedicate your financial resources to make it happen. And that's a very important element of any successful pledge drive. The next one is that pledge drives, no matter what pattern, are in a sense a project, and you need good project management and capacity to fulfill them. So you need the congregational bandwidth to make your pledge drive happen, no matter what type you are using. You may have experienced this yourself. I've certainly seen congregations in my work that decide they want to do a lot of things that they actually don't have the capacity to do. They don't have the time or volunteers to do them. So they end up doing too many things poorly and not enough things well. You will need a timeline, you'll need structure and planning, and you should start early. Most pledge drives, whether you're doing them annually or year-round, should have year-round planning and timelines and structure. You need dedicated volunteers that fit the pattern that you're going to use. You need leadership support and modeling. That includes professional leadership as well as board and other lay leadership. And you need options for ways your congregants can give. Obviously, pledging or financial commitments are different than giving or actual making donations. But if you have a different ways for people to fulfill their pledge, it will help your pledge drive be successful. And this is the last of these slides about what makes a successful drive. Is you can think of a pledge drive as a project that needs project management. You can also think of it as a communications campaign. With that, you need your congregants to understand the system that you're using. Obviously, if your congregant donors don't understand how your system is working, they're not going to fulfill what you're hoping they will do. You need inspiring messages in your communications. You need a full set of communications vehicles. By that I mean newsletter, announcements, handouts, publications. You need the web as many different communication vehicles as you can, you need to thank people appropriately. So it's not about figuring out how to ask people and collecting donations. There's also another piece about thanking people warmly, personally, as much as you can. You need to look at the data and evaluate the results. No matter what pattern you're using, you'll be using it in the future, and you probably used it in the past, and the information that you collect is usable information you should be using. You need to report to your congregation about not only what's happened with the pledge drive, but about your financials generally, and about how and about their giving. And that goes to the final point, which is once people make a financial commitment, you do need to keep following up with them until they have fulfilled that commitment, because they may need that information from you. So no matter what drive you are implementing, these are some success pieces that will make that work better. As part of this process, some of you may have seen this, I reached out to congregations who are thinking about doing year-round pledging, who are doing year-round pledging, or who tried year-round pledging and decided it wasn't working for them. So let me ask, of the people in the room, how many people are considering year-round pledging? Look around, a lot. How many people here are doing year-round pledging right now? A fair amount. Thanks for coming, you guys. How many people in the room did year-round pledging and decided to stop? Not surprised those people would not attend this workshop, but I thought I'd ask. All right, so, and I sent this survey through the Facebook UU Stewardship Group, which you don't if you don't belong to, you might want to consider that, and also through the UU Listserv UU Money, that if you don't belong, you might consider that. So I asked for responses. It was an electronic survey on the web, and I got 16 of them. I don't think that's very many. So it raised a question for me. Is there more buzz about year-round pledging than people actually doing it or thinking about it? Because even though we're Unitarian Universalists and, you know, we listen to PBS and we think of ourselves as grounded in intellectual pursuit, we are trend-oriented. We will go towards trends. So I can't tell you how pervasive year-round pledging is, but I only got 16 responses. As you can see, 5 of them are in startup mode. They're in planning mode. 8 of them were doing it when I surveyed them, and 3 of them decided to stop. They had implemented a program and decided to stop. So I asked them, why did you switch from an annual program to a year-round program? And the top 3 answers were burnout. So people were getting burned out with the annual program. They had trouble recruiting volunteers. Also, their pledgers, their congregants, were not responding well to the annual drive, so they wanted to try something different. And the annual drive was pretty intense for them. So it was a lot of work in a concentrated period of time. Some other responses I got were that they wanted to integrate pledging into the rest of congregational functioning. They wanted to create a more steady revenue stream. They wanted to facilitate more direct stewardship conversations. They wanted to adapt to new members joining and others either falling behind on their pledging or actually leaving the congregation. And then, interestingly, one person said, we decided to stop doing the annual drive for other challenges that were misdirected to this solution. So they had challenges in the congregation they thought year-round pledging would fix, but it was clearly a misallocation of decisions there. How long does it take to step into year-round pledging? The most common response I got was 2 years. So that's 2 years from the start of planning through the first year, because they consider the first year a pilot. And there's learning all through the first year. You'll hear more about that as we go along. The second most frequent response was a year. And then third was 8 months, but they felt like that was pushing hard. And then someone said 6 months. Fairly miraculous to me that someone could get this done in 6 months of planning, but I hope it's working well for them. Here are some of the upsides of year-round pledging that they cited. It helps send a clear message that stewardship is an enduring covenant. So it's not something you sign up for each year. It's an enduring covenant with the congregation through financial commitment. They felt like they had a higher response rate from congregants. So for their number of members, they had a higher percentage of congregants who were pledging. They learned sooner about people who were leaving or lowering their pledge. They had an ability to track incoming dollars to pledges, so they were able to track their pledges to their payment to pledge better. And they created a foundation for talking about stewardship year-round. Less volunteers were needed, but for those volunteers, they were working more consistently and more frequently, and they had more contact with people. I have a couple of slides of downsides because I got a lot more responses about downsides than upsides. In communications, it's harder to communicate success and tough to generate excitement because you don't have this kind of annual event where there's a lot of communication. It's difficult to create messages because if you're doing it year-round, it's hard to create and launch new messages the way you can with an annual drive. And there's a risk of people believing that you're always talking about money. The ramp-up was painful for people, and in some instances during those ramp-ups, the pledging actually went down. And then there's an education component where it takes 2 or 3 full cycles, this is what people said, for the congregants to get it, for them to understand how the system works. It's confusing to people who've done annual pledging, and there's always education needed for new members. Here's some more downsides. There's no yearly focused time to talk about stewardship and giving. If you're doing a year-round program, it can sometimes happen below the radar because you're talking to people in smaller groups. And so then people forget because it's not so much in the public sphere. It's possible to miss folks for an extended period of time. So this is exactly the opposite of one of the upsides they just told us a couple of slides ago. And new members never see the whole community participating. So if you join a congregation that's in year-round pledging, you will never see the whole congregation actively stepping into stewardship together as a group. It's always in smaller groups. It takes a lot more dedication and skill with fewer folks. So it's hard for people to keep up with the work. And you still have to do the cleanup and follow up. So in an annual drive, there's always a period of time when you have to kind of try to reach people who did not respond during the annual drive. That's also true in year-round pledging. It doesn't necessarily cure that automatically. There's no way to predict the total pledge income amount for the year because it iterates every time you meet with a new group. And it does not work with the pledge tracking software. And you'll hear more of that later in the presentation. How did these groups that responded to the survey, how were they trying to determine the effectiveness of this year-round giving program? The number one answer was pledge fulfillment. Now, that's a very interesting response to me because I've been doing this work with UU congregations for about 6 years. I've worked with about 30 congregations. And historically, UUs have fulfilled their financial commitments at a very high level. So it's interesting to me that people were using this as a measure of effectiveness when I thought, at least anecdotally, that this was not a challenge. Also, people were looking for pledge increases, total number of pledges, and weekly income. So So it sounds like people were tracking a lot more carefully in this program. That's how they were determining. Some other answers that weren't at the top of the list were that people were measuring the effectiveness of a year-round pledging program by how many people were paying with automatic withdrawal from their banking account or from a charge card. And also just generally the participation and reception by the congregation, how people were responding, what kind of feedback they were getting. Why? So the people who stopped, who did year-round pledging, spent the time to go into this program and then decided to stop. Why did they stop? They decided they didn't have enough bandwidth to focus on it and make it work. So they either thought it would be easier or thought they could engage people, and it turns out they couldn't. It was harder than they thought to find all year volunteers, took more time, not less year-round. So they thought it might have taken less of their time to do year-round pledging and found out that it took more. They had to do pledge ask in smaller chunks rather than all at once, so that it sounds like that felt less efficient to them. The record keeping and reporting was difficult, and there were unanticipated implementation issues. So then when they stepped into it, they had problems that they didn't expect. And that's partially why we're doing this workshop, is to give you guys enough information so that you have a sense of what you may be facing if you decide to step into this. Also, people felt like the stewardship message got lost without the annual communications. And reporting on pledging levels became difficult. And for their staff, this was too intensive for the staff to implement. So when you're thinking about it yourself, you should think about how ready your staff might be for this program. What does bandwidth mean? Thank you for asking that. By bandwidth, I mean kind of attention, capacity. As a congregation, you only have so much time and so many people involved, so many resources. So by bandwidth, I mean how much of that total pool of resources are being taken up by any one thing. Good, thanks. Now I'll ask Reverend David Pyle to come up and speak to you about the back end, and he'll start by telling you what he means by that term.
Good afternoon, everybody. So my name is David, and I'm glad I get to be with you all today. I'm one of those people that gets excited about church administration and finance. Who's with me? Yeah. So I'm glad to be with my peeps today. How wonderful is that? So it's good to be with you. So one of the things I have worked with a couple of congregations, one that I was serving, and then several others as a member of your regional staff, that have worked through this process. And one of the things that I realized was that there were actually two parts to implementing a year-round pledge campaign. It actually works for almost all stewardship, but let's stick with a year-round pledge. There is the front end, which is how you talk to congregants, how you get people to fill out those pledge cards, how you get people to, so you know, the volunteers are going to talk to people. And then there's the back end, how you track it, how you manage it, how you put it into your congregational systems, how you do data analysis. So I'm going to spend the next little while talking about that back end side, talking about the administration, talking about the finance committee chair sitting up late at night with lots of figures trying to figure out what they mean. Who's been there? Right? So, first thing I wanted to bring up was that this really is, moving to a year-round pledge, moving to where everybody is in pledge cohorts and a certain group of your congregation is being canvassed for their pledge every month. Different cohorts canvassed every month, which is one model of year-round pledging. But that's a fundamental shift in the way we provide stewardship to our congregations, in the way that our members relate to the time, talent, and treasure that they give to our congregations. So just to highlight that that's a fundamental shift that goes through the entirety of a congregational system. Finance folks must be able to understand and engage with the entirety of the congregation, both the ministerial leadership, the congregational members, the pledging friends, if you have that as a capacity, and also with your staff. So there are three primary administrative challenges. Pledge track, they come with a switch to a year-round pledge campaign. So first is pledge tracking. The second is budgeting using pledge numbers. We'll talk about that one in a second. And pledge confidentiality. And one of the things that I want to say, in almost every case that I have seen a year-round pledge cycle be successful, it was paired with a push for the congregation to move to some form of electronic giving. That some form of having people be able to go online and make a commitment that is debited, or in some form of electronic giving, has been a key component of every time I've seen it be successful. So let's talk first about data and tracking. Though it may seem counterintuitive, this may actually be a time to transition to a form of church management software. So whose congregation has a purchased form of church management software? All right, so that's a great thing. Who's got Church Windows? All right, who's got PowerChurch? So we got a couple of the big, there's lots of them out. Who's got CVCRM? There's at least one. I love CVCRM. So this is a time. You think you wouldn't want to do two major changes at once, but since that one is mostly one for your staff, this may be a good time to do it. And the reason why I say that is because once you put this system together, you're not going to want to change it. So make the whole change at once. Most church management software will allow you to track donations, but up to this point, as far as I've been able to tell, most of them are set up to track on an annual Canvas style. I know that in some conversations we've had with a couple of them, they're aware of year-round pledging and they're looking at modules that do that, but I have not seen that any of those have come out. Am I right about that, Beth? Do you know of any others? If you don't know, Beth, stand up for a second. Beth is, nobody ever gets to see Beth. She's the communications consultant for the Central East region. So, and she's recording our workshop today. So if you can find one, great. If not, it may still be a time to make that transition. You probably will need to find a way to set up some custom reports to be able to track the data, because you're moving basically from one annual campaign to 12 monthly campaigns, which is a core understanding of year-round pledging. So, for congregations that are using tools like QuickBooks, you can do custom reports, and that's beautiful. Pledge tracking is a must, I believe. This is my mini sermon within the sermon. Pledge tracking, one, lets you be able to do your fiduciary responsibility of the congregation in real time, but it also is a massively important pastoral tool for your minister. When things are happening in the lives of our congregations, one of the first places it is seen is in their ability to fulfill their pledge. And it's just a wonderful opportunity to be able to do for your congregation. So let's talk about data. So in an annual Canvas system, the whole congregation is compared at once. Everybody's on the same pledge cycle. If you are a month out from the end of your pledge cycle, you can look at the data and see where everybody is and know who hasn't fulfilled their pledge and who's close to doing it. You see how that's easier? In a year-round pledge cycle, each household has to be compared to the rest of their cohort. And each cohort, so you move once again from one analysis set to 12 analysis sets. All right? And the most common practice that I've found among our congregations is, because who got a little thump in their heart when I said move from one analysis set to 12? Who got a little fuzzy there? So 4 is better than 12. So most of our congregations have moved to doing that analysis quarterly instead of once, which is still more, but it's more manageable. So data tracking system and team, you know, the reason why I said about having doing the change for software at the same time is because once you set up a system, and you will have to find a system that works for you and your people, but once you set up a system, you're not going to want to change it. And it's easier to make changes in the building phase, in the year prior to, because you can do a quarterly analysis of your pledge, of how pledges are being completed, even under an annual pledge campaign, even in the year before you make this change. So one of the things I'm suggesting is if you're thinking about moving to a year-round pledge campaign in a year, start building the systems of how to track it the year before and practice them the year before. A good rule of thumb is that I love to suggest that you have a pledge analysis team be part of your finance committee. And a good rule of thumb is on that team, you're going to want one person for every 100 members of the congregation, not including the minister. Although for ministers in this room, you may dislike me when I say this, but I think that the ministers need to be part of that pledge tracking team. And the reason why I say that is because of the pastoral information. That if you as the minister know that this family just suffered the loss of a job, that may not be known in the congregation. But that is data that needs to be in understanding what is happening for that congregant's pledge. So for somehow have the minister in that loop. Are you all getting how the analysis is more complicated? Because I could spend more time on that, but I think you've got it. Include those who are going to make the follow-up calls in some way. So one of the, this is a recommendation, when you see someone is having a problem meeting their pledge, fulfilling their pledge, it is a good practice to find a way to be in communication with them during the year. There is, I'll just say this as a minister, there is so much shame that gets attached to people who are struggling with the ability to fulfill their pledge. It is a spiritual issue in our congregations. And the way that we can care for one another, to be in community with one another, is to be able to notice when someone is having that problem and approach it pastorally more than fiscally. Can the people say amen?
Amen.
All right. So one of the challenges, I'm going to ask you all, who knows what I mean when I talk about budget numbers that just seem squishy? I'll tell you, I as a minister, I've driven some finance committees nuts by showing up with squishy numbers, right? So one of the things that happens in year-round pledging is that the numbers get a little squishier, especially the pledge number. Now think about it. In an annual campaign, you're able to canvass the whole congregation, and at the end of that process, you come to a fairly solid number. You add up the numbers of what everybody's pledged, and you've got a solid number that can go into that budget, right? But if you're canvassing every month, that number changes every month. So one of the issues is you have to decide how you're going to arrive at a workable number, a squishy number, for doing your annual budgeting. And the most common practice is that you basically just choose, we're going to add up from one month to the next month in the year, and that's the number that's going to be in our budget. But knowing that that number is going to change throughout the year each month as people make their pledges. One of the beautiful things would be if, and this is what a lot of nonprofits do that use this type of a canvas. One of the things that nonprofits do is they move to a monthly budget cycle instead of an annual budget cycle. That every month their income line changes based upon how those pledge numbers change. That doesn't really fit in our polity. And did a whole bunch of finance chairs just start to have their hearts doing this again? At that idea of a monthly budget. So the best thing that we have come to is you just choose a cycle and then you monitor it. You make that what that hard number is that updates every month, you make that part of your monitoring. You look at it every month and see how it's changing so that you can be aware of trends. If you see the number going up, then you can react accordingly. If you see the number going down, then you can react accordingly. And tracking, it's, I'll tell you this, I have found in my working with congregations that implement year-round pledging well, the number goes up. They may, sometimes they have a year or so where it's just different and people don't know what they're doing, so they don't pledge. They probably still make their pledges, but they don't fill out the, but overall, we've seen a success rate of that number going up within year-round pledging. So reporting. Promise we're almost through the back end stuff. reporting, it needs proper, it gets more complex. You get why, I don't have to go back to it, that you're now doing 12 reports instead of one. And you're having to tell people when you're sending donor statements, when you're sending pledge statements, you're having to tell them in their pledge in relationship to where they are in their particular pledge cohort's pledge year. So one of the best ways I've seen to do that is, you are 75% through your pledge year and this is your pledge. But that is different for every one of the cohorts. Is this making sense? All right. And your behind statements are not recommended. I'll just say that. And let me tell you why I say that. Because everybody pledges and pays their pledge payments differently. Let's do a quick study in this room. How many people pay weekly? Make a weekly, in some ways, you drop it in the plate every week. How many people write a check a month? Or it comes out of your bank account a month? Go hands down. How many people do one lump sum a year right before tax day? Right? How many people do it when you happen to remember it? So we all do this differently, all right? Our spirits call us to do the payment of our pledges in different ways. And so often those you are behind statements, which often begins to come in a year-round pledge cycle, they do more harm than good because they don't recognize the variety amongst us. I believe in just telling people where they are and where they are in their pledge cohort. Amen? All right. So as a fiduciary agent, I mentioned this before, you've really got to add, in a year-round pledge cycle, you've really got to add two additional tracking numbers to your work. The first one is tracking that 12-month hard number for all pledges that updates every month. That every time you complete a pledge cohort, they've all filled out their new pledges, you then add all 12 months up and get to a new hard number. You track that as a fiduciary responsibility. And the second is you track the overall pledge fulfillment for all cohorts. In other words, quarterly is what I recommend. You go into and you do an analysis of all cohorts and see who is where in meeting their pledge. And looking back, how does that relate to how they've met their pledge in the past? If I know Joe and Jan, they've made no pledge payments at all this year, and it's month 10. But I know that in month 11 of the last 4 years, they've written one massive check. Then I'm not worried. But you have to know that data. You have to know the giving cycle of each of your congregants. And in this case, you have to do that analysis based on 12 separate pledge groups. It's possible. I promise. There's a man back there that did it with me. He's smiling. So, and that's the thing. It had to be a joint effort. I believe that level of analysis has to be a joint effort between lay members and staff, because of the complexity of the data. So let's talk about it being a joint effort between lay members and staff for a second. I am not unique, but I'm pretty unique in that I am one of the few people who is a Unitarian Universalist minister and now a member of the UUA staff who began as a church administrator. Yeah. Which is why I get to do workshops like this. But So church administrators are often the ones that have designed the system you are using, or at least had significant influence in designing, especially data tracking and sending out pledges. And I'll tell you what, we get attached to those. It works for us. Change is not a good thing if you've built the system and you've used it for 10 years, or 15 years, or 25 years. So they may not welcome the redesign. And often as church administrators, one of the things that has happened, I'm saying this as you to understand your congregational administrators a little bit. In church systems, they tend to have been granted the power of no. I would like to use this room at the church. May I? No. I would like to put this in the bulletin as an announcement. May I? No. Ministers and lay leaders, we often have the power of yes. Now, administrators do say yes, and they can, but often they're in some ways the gatekeeper for the congregational system at times. So understand that if they immediately react to an idea to change this core function of how they do their work that a lay leadership committee has decided, and you haven't been consulting with them, it's understandable the reaction you may get. Amen? Bring your administrators in early and often if you're thinking about a change from an annual canvas to a year-round pledge. Same thing for your bookkeepers if you have them. Because they actually are the ones that are going to have that are going to be able to make this change work for you administratively. They're the ones who know about the system and how it's going to need the change. So you need their buy-in. And all staff, this is one other thing I'm adding in. And this is a little countercultural to who we are as Unitarian Universalists. I believe that if you move to a year-round pledge campaign, I believe that all of your staff need to know who is in each month's cohort. They need to know who's getting canvassed that month. So to think through how they can support your pledge captains, your pledge canvas team, to be able to make sure that they're feeling inspired, that they're ready to, that they're committed to the congregation, that they're committed. So I make the case that that's not secret information from your staff. That they need to know how to support you as you are canvassing that 1/12 of your congregation in the month of April or the month of May. So timelines and rollout. Transition is often focused on what Jason's going to talk about in a minute, and that is the front end. The transition time, we talk about how we're going to talk to people and what we're going to talk to them about and how we're going to make it exciting. The back end is critical, and I believe it has to be in place, somewhat tested and ready to go before you begin the year-round pledge campaign, before you begin executing the front end. So, and that at the first quarter, after you've made 3 months in and you do that first quarterly analysis, you've got to do a whole system review. You have to test how your administrative functioning is working. After the first year is completed and people have switched into the staggered pattern, you know, there's one of the challenges of this is that if you've been in a year-round, if you've been in an annual canvas style, some people are going to have to extend the pledge they made in the last canvas, and some people may have to decrease. So some people so you have to make a decision whether you ask people that your last canvas, consider it was a 3-month pledge, we're canvassing you again, because you are in the July group. Or do you wait to canvass them and have that be a 15-month pledge that they made in the last annual canvas? Do you get this technicality? So you have to decide between those two, which is more important to you. So in the first year, there is no past history. Everything is all your previous tracking of how people make pledges changes when you do this. And congregants are adjusting, and they may initially underpay or overpay because they've just got confused about the pledge they made 3 months ago. Is that their pledge, or is this their pledge, or what? The confusion is understandable, right? Communicate, communicate, communicate. And then you should not consider your system firm until you've been through it for a year and done another review at the end of a year. So I think we're going to move into the front end and come back to questions afterwards. So have I scared you? Good.
Can't scare me.
Can't scare you. All
right. Thank you. Well, that was a kind of an ominous ending there. All right. I need like 3 hands up here because the wind is blowing so hard that it's moving the papers around. All right, so again, I'm Jason Kenworthy. I'll be talking to you about the front end of pledging. So this is the congregational outreach piece. Little context, I currently serve on First Unitarian's Committee on Ministry, but that's not why I'm here. For the past 4 years, I'd worked on stewardship, reimagining stewardship task forces, and then actually the stewardship committee for 2 years after we had implemented the year-round pledging, and we switched in late 2012. So I'll be talking about both my personal and our congregational experience with the front end of transitioning to and moving forward with the year-round pledging and our current stewardship committee, which is what we refer to as our abundance ministry. All right, so just a quick shout out, First Unitarian Society of Denver. We've been in Denver since 1871. Colorado didn't even exist yet. And we're near the state capitol building and our downtown, so we are an urban sanctuary. And again, we transitioned in October of 2012. And that was after more than 2 years of task forces to reimagine how we approach stewardship and also our membership function as well. And those task forces really identified all of the upsides that that Mark mentioned, and we've certainly experienced many of those, as well as some of the downsides that Mark had mentioned. So although we didn't fully anticipate all of those when we got things going, so this workshop would have been great for us in about summer of 2012. So just size-wise, our congregation has 324 pledge units that encompass our 401 members. Pledges account for 85% of our budget, so 85 cents of every dollar needed for our mission has to come from our pledges, which I've been told is actually a relatively high percentage. A lot of other congregations, it's closer to 75% or so. But of course, it varies. And we were actually a little bit different from what David mentioned. We really worked hard on the back end and probably should have added a little bit more time to work out some of the front end discussions. So my group of slides is both what did we end up doing and then also a mix of lessons learned. So once we made the decision to actually switch, we spent 4 months working really hard with our staff bookkeeper and our staff church administrator to map out the big picture back end and really how to kind of trick CiviCRM into handling monthly groups. As David mentioned, this is not a straightforward process, but they did end up creating a new field that you could just add a group name to that makes it work fairly well. They also had to develop and then or revise our existing systems to send letters, receive letters, track the pledges, track annuals, project into the future. And that was across about three different software platforms. And also we had to figure out how to develop statements as well. So this entailed, of course, frequent meetings and brainstorming with the finance council and our assistant, or our treasurer and assistant treasurer, who also had just been elected. So we had essentially a brand new finance council, brand new pledge system. So everything kind of changed all at the same time for us, which was good and bad. So in short, you know, our first year was really very iterative, and no one really knew what to expect. So we did a lot of listening and adjusting. And we did change our systems. Well, we tweaked our systems. We didn't change the whole system, but we kept tweaking as we move forward. And so that's the great and also horrifying thing about year-round pledging is that you can switch it up next month if you need to. And so here we are. We're almost done with our third year. So we're 2 3/4 years into year-round pledging. And we're finally at a spot where the back-end pieces seem to be functioning fairly well. All right. So again, I cannot overemphasize, get your committee set up before you get going. You really need to have enough people in place before making the switch. That would have dulled a lot of our growing pains. I was the ex officio chair, and for the first year, the entire standing committee to implement this. So while that did keep committee meetings to a minimum, since it was just me, that was a lot of work because I have another job and a toddler. So we now have a five-person committee, and I'll show that on the next slide. So we found it was hard to recruit. We figured it would be kind of easy to just pull people in as the year went on. It was hard to recruit folks because we were changing the duties, the tools, and the commitments and the time investment as we were running the campaign. So we were doing all of that at the same time. And as Mark and David both said, you know, it really takes a different kind of sustained energy, which is different for people who have volunteered for us to do the annual campaigns in the past and were used to what to expect and what that time investment was gonna be. So we were fortunate our leadership development team and our board helped recruit an ad hoc team of three additional folks during our second year and then worked really hard to get the standing committee with the five folks that I'll show on the next slide. And we had that in place by the end of last year. So again, the challenge here was that people aren't really lining up in large numbers to, quote, work on the stewardship committee, particularly when they knew we were switching things up. So we started really using action verbs, which of course are good for any stewardship campaign. You connect working on the committee, in addition to making your pledge, to investing in the life-transforming mission of your church. So we use words like cultivating, enriching, empowering, sustaining, growing. So these are all action verbs, not meeting our budget, which is does not sound very exciting, but of course allows all of those other things to happen. So this is our five-person committee structure, which seems like kind of a logical minimum assemblage of people for us in a congregation our size. We've got two co-chairs and a coordinator, or in this case, we actually have two, excuse me, for what we call our abundance ambassadors. These are our pledge wranglers that handle all of the follow-up and the thank yous. Our goal eventually is to have more than a dozen ambassadors. We're not quite there yet. We also have a data wrangler. That's the person who tracks all the dollars and the cents and the electronic information and liaisons between the staff, the ministry, finance council, and the board. Dave, could you pass me my water? Just getting over some sort of throat thing, so apologies. So the data wrangler is also our liaison between the board, the finance council, and the ministry as well. And then we have a communications coordinator that is our liaison really to the congregation. So at some point, you really need to figure out how to you're going to divvy up your congregation into monthly cohorts. This should be done early while you're designing your back end. Some front end things you should keep in mind is consider the expectations of your congregation and your larger amount donors. How have they been asked in pledge years past? And let the congregation know, let the congregation know, let the congregation know, let the congregation know how you are going to divide them up and what group they are in. We/I did not do that well the first year, and that created a lot of unnecessary confusion, so do that. For us, we tried to keep the cohorts to about 20 people, which is about as many as you want for any one person to be responsible for follow-up. The excuse me, sorry. The top 40, what we call the kind of the top 40 group of pledgers, became one group. And then we shuffled the other pledgers in the congregation, so we had a mix of pledge amounts that totaled a similar total dollar amount for each group, which, again, helps with tracking and projections. So you're looking at about the same amount of money every month. Now, we kept our larger amount donors as a separate cohort based almost entirely on just tradition, but that really is up to you. So with any successful drive, let's switch slides here. All right, any successful drive, you really need, just a second. If you're gonna be talking to folks, you might need a cough drop every once in a while. Thank you, Mark. You wanna start off with some sort of communications plan, and you wanna focus again on that mission, the vision, your congregational identity. So for these sustained discussions about money, they need to be engaging and empowering. And so that's where your mission and vision and what makes you, you as a UU congregation, really so critical. So for us, that meant we really wanted to embrace our urban sanctuary identity. We're the only urban church in the Denver Boulder cluster. And we also developed the tagline, Fuel the Flame, to talk about our stewardship process. So you do want to start off with some sort of plan before you get started. Who's going to do what, when, and how often for your communication? Excuse me. And when you're making such a huge change, you want to consider this four-step outline. One is tell the congregation what you plan to do. Two, tell the congregation what you're doing. Three, tell the congregation what you did. And then repeat as often as necessary. And we did all of these things to some degree, but really, it took us a while to kind of develop this in a strategic way. And so we had a really successful annual campaign in 2012 where we used the tagline, this is what abundance looks like. And we wanted to build off of that energy as we moved to year-round pledging. So we even rebranded our stewardship committee, the Abundance Ministry, which was a way of reframing this discussion and hopefully really directing it to be about recognizing abundance and celebrating generosity. And renaming it a ministry instead of just a committee was another symbolic step to show that this was a critical piece of that stewardship has to the rest of the congregation. One thing to be aware of, though, particularly when you had a small committee like we did, is that all of the work of coordinating the back end, which is a lot, can take away from the front end, which it did. And I think that was really an unnecessary complication that we really unwittingly heaped upon ourselves. Watch the breeze up here. All right, so our year-round pledge campaign has a letter-based ask. So we send out letters to each monthly group. So print is really our default medium. As with an annual campaign, having a graphic identity helps. First Unitarian changed their logo last year, so this was another opportunity for us to generate and build some new excitement. We put out announcements, progress reports, and the occasional pleading for participation in our monthly newsletter, which is a great venue, of course, for longer items. Shorter pieces, updates, reminders for participation when in our orders of service, and we even plastered the walls with a variety of posters, including this sort of basic infographic technique here, showing how much of every dollar in our budget has to come from pledges, and then where we are as far as those letters coming back and pledge amounts received. You can also go with the unofficial spokesperson model, which we also did in the Sundays leading up to Super Bowl. Although you may not recognize this immediately, this is, of course, Peyton Manning, who, if you're in Denver, is an immediately recognizable person. So this, having this up on the walls in a church really helped spark some good discussion. People were like, that's Peyton Manning on the wall. And they'd walk over and they'd be like, ah, it's about the stewardship campaign. It's about money. So, yeah, again, know your audience. And so we really got some good discussion. People then came over to the table we had set up and were asking about it. And also we, of course, got to also talk about how you build a football team to not only get to but also win the Super Bowl. So a bit of a sore subject there. So as with any campaign, if you're really going to talk about money, you know, you actually need to talk about money. And so we ramped up our visible presence after that interaction that I mentioned in our opening to the session here. So I would give not quite monthly announcements from the pulpit before services started, presented reports at the congregational meeting. In our second year, our goal was to have what we were terming Abundance in Action Sundays on the second and fourth Sundays of the month. Now, at First Unitarian, our first and third Sundays are called Giving in Action Sundays, where we donate our offering to a local community organization and have a representative from that organization speak to us just before we receive the offering. So for the Abundance in Action Sundays, we were recruiting members to give testimonials about what First Unitarian means to them, why they pledge, and in some cases, people were willing to share both how they pledged and what they pledged to illustrate their connection to the mission of the church. So, and as Mark mentioned earlier, you know, these really are, when you're reaching in and sharing those powerful personal stories, particularly right before an offering is received, they really do have a significant impact. And we would pair that effort with the Ask Abundance table in the community room during coffee hour between the services, which is a more informal way of answering questions, providing information, and even receiving pledge letters from folks. And so building off of that personal from the pulpit communication, a critical piece of our abundance ministry is what we term the abundance ambassadors. They provide that personal one-on-one contact for follow-up, pledge acknowledgement, and thank you. They also serve a tremendous role with the back end and noting where there's pastoral care issues, because they're, you know, again, the people that are doing the personal interactions there. Our first year, again, this was a challenge. We had a shortage of ambassadors. Our pledges went down significantly. Not sure if there's a causation there, but it certainly didn't help that our follow-up was inconsistent. Coordinating with our small group ministry is something that we've identified as a goal moving forward to really build those discussions so that people are having the discussions among themselves rather than always being started by an abundance ambassador or someone else from the abundance ministry. And our RE program has is a spectacularly committed group of families, and they're some of our most regular pledgers and another great opportunity for extra targeted outreach because, again, these are the parents and the families and the children that are the very literal future of our congregation. So, of course, it's 2015. Any communication plan, you need to have a strong electronic component. In addition to email reminders and acknowledgments and follow-up, we submitted articles to our weekly e-announcement, updated our website pages for the first time in many years, and it's probably time to do that again. We included a frequently asked questions section, set up for the first time a stewardship email account for congregations so they had one email account they could always send to ask questions about the Abundance Ministry. It was Gmail-based, too, so we could share documents about the back end as well. And one thing we did not do but really should have in order to add a little bit of spontaneity, informality, and immediacy to the proceedings was really have a good social media presence as well. All right, so given everything that you've heard today about successful campaigns, the back end, a little bit about the front end, and so I guess, the X factor or what we would probably call the chalice factor in all of this is really finding and tailoring back end and a front end to something that's going to work for your congregation and your congregational calendar. If I was going to go back and redo this again, I most certainly would have started a year-round pledging in July 1st with our new budget year as opposed to October 1st. So now we're on the unintentionally not great system of having a tax year, January through December, a church year, June through or July through June, and then a pledge year, which is October through September. So do not do that. pick a calendar so that you have maybe your tax year and your church budget year, and pick one of those and go with it. Why did we pick October 1? We actually did it so that we could get rolling immediately. We were really excited to get this moving, and that was the earliest that we could get it done after our back-end work was completed. And that also made it so that we wouldn't have to run another annual campaign before doing the year-round pledging. And another thing, just remember, you do need to be flexible with this because as with any new endeavor, you really don't know what you're getting into until you get into it. And we thought things were in really good shape, but it ended up taking, of course, a lot more time and energy than we had initially thought. And we were constantly tweaking things, which is a testament really to our the fiscal leadership of our congregation and the extraordinary hard work and kind of get it done, make it work, find a new way spirit from our bookkeeper and office administrator, our church administrator, who are both on staff. So make sure you've got a plan, but be ready, kind of like this tree here, be ready to interact with your environment and make it work for you and really make it your own. A few things we built into our system to try and make it scalable is we started with less than 20 people in each monthly group so that new members could be added to the month in which they sign the book or join. And then we can create extra groups as needed and as ambassadors are available. Do note, pledges may go down. David mentioned that for those that run a really successful version, pledges start ticking up. We've noticed a downward trend. Our first 2 years, of course, there's an awful lot going on economically around this, and we certainly didn't want pledges to go down, but it did. So over the past 2.5 years, we've averaged somewhere around $0.90 to $0.96 pledged for every dollar that we've asked. So our pledges have gone down, but we've seen increases in like our auction and some other fundraisers and things that have offset that. And a really interesting trend here in my completely, these are very squishy numbers, this is completely schematic graphic here, is that, I guess let's take a quick step back here. Some of the way that the pledges went down, we weren't sure what was going on there, but we thought it might be, again, continued confusion about how this whole thing works. We didn't have the big energy surrounding the campaign, although we're working really hard to change that. And when we found that pledge dollars overall are lower, those pledges are being met at a much higher rate. So instead of, so right now we're writing off, you know, a few thousand dollars in unfulfilled pledges, as opposed to a few, maybe tens of thousands of dollars in unfulfilled pledges. So again, that gap that we had built into our budget was able to accommodate the lower amount of pledges. So people were pledging a lot more realistically under this campaign, at least for the last two and a half years. So again, why would that occur? Perhaps the annual campaign energy was too good, and people may have been pledging kind of outside of their actual means and their ability to do that. Or maybe it was that the follow-up wasn't that great and we weren't interacting and really reminding folks of their commitments and the covenant that they had made when they made their pledge. So maybe we weren't meeting their expectations, and it was probably a combination of both plus a bunch of other external factors. So certainly our first year of year-round pledging didn't really have very consistent follow-up. That's improved greatly. And it was a little bit unfortunate because it followed an annual campaign where we had a follow-up captain who was uncommonly good and then went to a seminary, of course. So so a quick recap for a first Unitarian. You know, it was, as advertised, it was a bit more of a painful process than we were expecting for the first year. But we're now wrapping up year three, and and the new committee has been in place for almost a year now. And it's really starting to kind of hit its stride. So what we've recognized is that we have plenty of room to grow, to really enact the system that we've put in place. We feel that the back end is functioning at a much better level now. We've got the statement thing figured out. We've got the tracking stuff figured out. We're lucky that our treasurer is does bookkeeping for a major international company, and so he's able to do all these constructions on how to do a mix of actual income plus projections based on the last 3 years, based on, you know, actuals and income. And so it's a remarkable system that he's got set up, and it works really quite well for them to do the budgeting process. So what we really need to do now is that we've got the pieces in place is to really grow the energy and the actual front end and really get it going to integrate that message into the mission and into our Sunday services and small group ministries so that we can really continue to fuel our flame. And I think we've got... Oh, okay.
Thank you, Jason. We're going to have questions in a minute, but before we do, I want to point out some potential resources for you beyond this meeting. So as I heard Mary Catherine Morn say yesterday well in a workshop, look around the room. These are people in this room who can be a resource for you. Obviously, Jason is a layperson who does this in his congregation. Aside from that, if you're not part of Facebook Stewardship Lab, you might be. The UUA listserv UU Money, the UUA and regional websites. This is being taped, videotaped, so the slideshow along with the video is going to be on the CERG website, CERG. CERGUUA.org is that website. In addition, there's a sign-up sheet going around for an email blast that I will put this slideshow up on our website, the Stewardship for Us consulting website, so it'll be available there. Go to your regional assemblies, great place, or district assemblies if you still have them, and then Stewardship for Us also has a stewardship blog. I would ask, how many of you have smartphones with a QR reader on it? Okay, I'm going to pass this around. Here's a QR code for an evaluation of this workshop. If you have the UUA GA app, it also has a QR code reader in it, so you can use that as well. So you guys both may want to stand up here because I'm not sure if you'll line up at the microphone because we are being recorded. And please ask, if you have a question for a specific presenter, let them know that.
You're just assuming the first one's mine.
Yeah. Give your name, please, and your congregation.
Okay, my name's Ann Schneider from Valley Unitarian Universalist in Chandler, and I have a question for The last presenter, you showed really interesting graphs on what we call the discount rate or the collection rate,
right.
Pledges made, actually collected. And do you actually know what percent, you said a few thousand dollars, but do you know what percent your collection rate is now under your new system?
As far as how much we're taking in versus how much we actually budgeted
pledged.
For?
You've had, what, 30 months or so of this. Do you have a figure on the collection rate?
It's coming in close to, it's between 90 and 96%.
Yeah, but that's a huge difference.
Well, it depends on the first year. It was closer to 90, and then it's inched up every quarter since then.
Okay.
And our follow-up has gotten better, so we think that's the reason.
Okay,
so,
thanks.
Sure.
Let me add one little thing about that. Everything tells us that the more you do online giving, the higher that rate goes.
Hi, I'm Willie Lupka, board president at the Conejo Valley UU Fellowship. Hi, David. First off, I want to mention that if we all stick around for about five more minutes, I think we may witness a minor miracle, which is that it may begin snowing in this room.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I'm sticking around.
Evaluation.
It'd be incredibly cool. We've been doing year-round pledging for 4 or 5 years. After this General Assembly, we're going to make a decision as to whether or not to continue with it or to return to an annual pledge canvas format. I'd say we're 90% or better likely to make that decision to abandon year-round pledging. I would love to dialogue with anyone about our experiences and why we're likely to reach that decision. But one question for the moment, which is, be very interested to know if in the congregations that have been doing this for a while and find it to be better and very successful, how big are they? What is the typical size of a congregation where you can really make it work?
Can we talk about that, or I can? Either one.
So the survey responses that I got were from congregations of all different sizes. So I can't help too much with that from the responses I got.
So I'll simply add this. The challenges cross size lines. Especially at the back end challenges. The difference is that the larger congregations tend to have greater staff capacity. All right, that's the only real difference that I've seen. So.
Yes, my name is Ted Danielson. I'm moderator of Northwest Unitarian Universalist Church in Southfield, Michigan. Former finance chair many times, former pledge drive chair many times. The one thing that I see that you didn't really cover as to how you deal with is the celebratory aspect of a canvas.
Yeah.
To have a kickoff event that talks about your theme for this upcoming event, which often changes for good reasons, not just for hype, and a closing celebration of this is what we did and this is what we're going to do as a result of what we did. How do you deal with those two losses?
So it's front end, or I have something I can add to your choice.
I'll do that. Yeah. So that was something that we wanted to reinstate, was more of the kind of the party atmosphere around things, and we're trying to figure out how to do that, whether it be monthly brunches, desserts, get-togethers, or whatever it is. And we just didn't have the capacity to do that our first couple years, and we probably should have built that in to make sure that was still a piece, because people, the feedback we got was that they really want that. And so as we're moving forward, that's something we're definitely looking at, is how to create, again, that celebratory atmosphere, whether it be in your monthly cohort or also in the congregation every month. But it's a piece that we're still working on. But.
Yeah, I want to second that. I want to just say I love the phrase wrangler, cohort wrangler, instead of pledge captain, which is the one we used. The one that I want to say is that it really is how you train and coordinate the person that's leading that cohort. They need to be able to speak to the vision of the church. They need to be able to bring the minister in to talk to that cohort. They need to be able to create that celebratory atmosphere for that cohort each month. So that's really the best answer.
Kathleen Rollins, parish co-minister at the West Shore Unitarian Universalist Church.
Hello, dear heart.
Hey, at Cleveland, Ohio. Some of my folks, you know, we have some of the same issues about Canvas, and so some of my folks have created something they're calling the Engagement Committee. And the idea is to, and we're about 550 members, is to form groups of people that engage with church members on the belief that engaged members ultimately become better givers because they feel this deeper connection to the church. So that is developing, but there's another component of that, which is also talking with people about their pledges.
Right.
So what they're trying to do is combine sort of the social, the friendship networks, the engagement, and talk about pledge. I was wondering, has this been done in this way that you know of? And if do you have any thoughts about what it would mean to combine those two seemingly, I wouldn't say they're disparate, I just think it might be challenging to try and do both.
Thank you, Kathleen. At least three of the congregations I'm working with have come up to that same desire, that if we could leverage the groups that are already in the congregation where there's already community built and leverage that into a cohort, how beautiful would that be? And then they run into the problems, that those groups are not evenly divided, that they don't reflect the, you know, a wide variety in the congregation. So I think that's at the growing edge of what year-round pledging looks like, and I would love, the congregation I know that's trying this again is the UU Congregation of Atlanta, Georgia. But they've run into the same issues, and I think they're probably stepping back from it. They're really focusing on how to train their canvassers to create those cohorts into those close-knit communities. Does that make sense? Yeah.
The one thing I would add is that stewardship is always closely aligned with the activities of the membership committee, which is about that engagement you're talking about. So no matter what kind of implementation plan you have for your pledge drive, you should be meeting with the membership committee to talk about those overlaps. They're very key. And I think both of these presenters also talked about how it's about engagement, you know, so, and that usually falls within the membership committee purview. So you need to be talking to them.
I was basically just going to second that, in that our, the two task forces that we had, one was reimagining membership and stewardship, and so we kind of went on parallel paths where we did stewardship, so that became the abundance ministry, and then our membership committee became our connections ministry, and unfortunately that effort slowed to a bit of a halt, so we were going parallel, and that ministry is now ramping up, and so again, I think we've got the system in place, we just didn't have, not all at the same time, and so we're getting there.
So there's a lot of people at the mic. We're going to take one more. The workshop is reached its ending time, and Mark Ewert has so popular, he's got another workshop he's about to go do. On what, Mark?
Electronic
on electronic giving. So remember what I was highlighting? Mark's getting ready to do. What room, Mark?
Next door.
Next door. So Jason and I will stay around. We'll be happy to answer any more questions. We'll take one more in the room, and then we'll close the workshop. So please go ahead.
Thank you very much for taking my last question. I'm John Mason at the Unitarian Church in Westport, Connecticut. I've been on many pledge drive committees there and stewardship committees. I want to thank you very much for this very informative session. My question is this. Let's say I'm like the average member of the congregation, about 60 or 70% of the congregation, who don't really pay much attention to stewardship, or they just pledge every year, but they're not particularly interested in the mechanics and logistics of it. They don't really care to know much about it. They've been giving on an annual basis every year for the last 20 years. Now you're going to come in and introduce this radical change and tell the congregation that we're going to start this completely different system. What are the meta messages that you are going to use to convince somebody like me that this is a great idea, this is going to improve our congregation, and get me excited about it, get me on board with it?
So I would say for a significant portion of the membership, what changes is what month they fill out that card. right? And what changes for us in leadership is we're looking for a deeper engagement. We're looking to build relationship. We're looking to be close. So the message that I give is when I've advised other congregations about this, is the meta message is that this is about building deeper relationship amongst us. This is about us sharing this part of our spiritual journey, this about the financial stewardship and care, to take it out of that private moment that for so many of our congregations it's been of me with a card, and to build it into a wider community. It's in some ways turning stewardship into a small group ministry. And you know that's the meta message that I have used.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the key is to, if you're going to make the switch, like with the example I gave at the beginning, you really do need to integrate that into everything that you do, so that people can see that it's not just, we're not just meeting a budget, and you know, it's like we are, you know, transforming people's lives and provide those examples. And our letters actually include some of the like, here's what we want to do this year. We just hired a part-time assistant minister. We wanted some youth coordinator positions, looking towards growing, you know, some other of our social justice work. And so laying out those really strong goals that have dollar signs attached to them in the letters, and what, you know, in our vision of where this is going is that also then occurs, you know, throughout the year from the pulpit, throughout the year in RE classes, throughout the year in our small group ministry, and so that they're hearing the message over and over again. But for those folks that, you know, just take the money out of my checking account every month, that still works. The form is still clear, and we'll still happily withdraw directly from your checking account if that's the level of engagement that you want. So we're trying to make a system where we have the capacity to make those discussions congregation-wide, but also on a smaller group scale as well. So
I want to say thank you all. Mark and my contact information is up here. Our business cards are up here. We would like to have the email list back when you're done. Thank you all for coming. It's been a joy to be with you. Now go.
Glad I had a cough drop.
I've been doing great all week.
No, I'm the board president. I chair our search committee.
It's so cold in here.
Maybe four.
I was going to hand out emergency blankets. You know those Mylar blankets? I'm next door. It's normal temperature.
Normal temperature.
Well, you should ask him to talk to the people. Never heard from anyone.
they have meetings, about half of them. The others meet, and they meet. So, he's on.
We got the big list. One of them. We didn't publish it.
Yeah.
That was really the other thing was we started the process of forming
So you have a thermometer and you show it's already halfway up.
So anyway, so yeah. So
how big is Woodinville?
We're about 100.
Okay.
We're growing, but this to me,
I was so disappointed that I didn't get an answer about it. Because I could see, if we were going to stick with this and do it right, I would want to have a ratio of 1 to 3 and 1 to 4, which would mean that the benefit of less volunteers would disappear. You need tons of volunteers. And the second thing is, and then there's, of course, you need back end tracking, there's a lot of work, but also I would want to have annual all those things. Right now, all we have is it's great to be generous, everybody, it's your turn to do it again, which is a good message, but it gets old.
Willie, that isn't inspiring. You know how to do that.
You need, like he was saying, we're gonna grow our youth program. You want people to feel like there's. It's not about, again, the bill. It's about reaching the ministry goals, but it needs to be a little more specific than just extol the virtues of generosity, so therefore, increase by 10%.
So I have a question for you.
I hope to
see you again. Church has about 300 pledges. We've worked in there. We've been around for a long time. We've been doing traditional in the old ministry. I agree with 300. I agree with you about the intentional and the ratio is problematic.
Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe, like you said, because they only